Chapter 7. The Outer Character. Human beings, as social animals, need to manage the impressions they make on others. They do so by playing a great variety of roles. The evolutionary purpose of these recitals is to get along, get ahead, and get laid. Because their survival depended on stellar performances, our ingenious ancestors evolved consummate skills for imitation and expression. In short, humans are now, and always have been, actors. This doesn't mean we're insincere. It's simply the common sense realization that as we move from situation to situation, we subtly shift from self to self, depending on the relationship of the moment, priest-confessor, boss-employee, wife-husband, stranger-stranger. A human being can swing from acting like a child to acting like a lover to acting like a New Yorker, or all three at once. So once you've circled the orbits of your cast galaxy, you will need to bring each character to life. In this chapter, we explore the composite of vivid and personal selves that make first and ongoing impressions on readers and audiences. This collection of outer-facing behaviors, mannerisms, and personality traits becomes the role's characterization. Characterization. To organize creative work, divide complex characters into two aspects, characterization and true character. The term true character names the crew of inner selves, core, agent, hidden, that live out of sight inside the mind and will be the subject of the next chapter. Characterization names the composite of social and personal selves, the sum total of all observable and inferable traits. Discovery of the many traits expressed through these selves is hard, imaginative work. So try following your character around 24/7. As you do, you will come to know all her explicit traits, such as name, age, sexuality, her home and how she furnishes it, her occupation, and the living it gives her. You will learn the grammar of her body language, gestures, facial expression, tones of voice, moods, and vibes. By listening carefully to what she says and closely observing how she treats people, you can also sense her implicit traits, such as her talents and intelligence, beliefs and attitudes, moods and hopes, all that she appears to be, all that the world sees. The three functions of characterization. Characterization supports your story with three primary functions: credibility, originality, intrigue. Credibility. What's a writer's worst fear? That the reader or audience will find her work boring? Dislike her characters? Disagree with her ideas? Possibly. But the greatest dread, it seems to me, is disbelief. When a reader or audience does not believe in the actions characters take, when they sour on the telling, thinking thoughts like, "I don't believe that that kind of woman would do things like that," they toss the book aside, or click the remote, or head for an exit. Credibility begins with characterization. Readers and audiences involve themselves when they sense an honest connection between the cast's mental, emotional, and physical traits and what they say, feel, and do. Honest characterizations induce readers and audiences to surrender to the telling, even the most fantastic, as if it were actual. Harry Potter and Luke Skywalker are two famous examples. Originality. We do not go to a storyteller to learn what we already know. We go with a prayer. Please, please let me gain insights into life I've never had before. Let the characters be originals I've never met before. Originality begins with specificity. The more generalized the characterization, the more imitative, predictable, and inflexible the role. But the more specific the characterization, the more original, surprising, and changeable the character. Suppose you felt that your character, in general, would be fashion conscious. If you then followed that up with an exhaustive research into the state of fashion today, plus first-person observations of trends you see on the street, plus hours spent faux shopping in the hippest of shops, filling notebooks full of details, taking photos with your phone, then you would come away with a one-of-a-kind characterization, a look no one has ever quite seen before, a credible original. Intrigue. A unique characterization captures our curiosity, making us want to know the true inner character who lives behind the mask of outer traits. Suppose we were shown a drunken, abusive, angry, out-of-work husband sitting in a darkened living room in his underwear, swilling a can of beer, sweating away, running his grease-stained fingers through his beard, watching an NFL rerun. Would that image make us wonder, but who is he really? Doubtful. Clichés destroy intrigue. A clichéd characterization raises a question that answers itself. Who is this character? Exactly who she seems to be. Like a block of cement, she's the same on the inside as the outside. To create credible characters that spike the audience reader's curiosity and reward their intrigue, build a fascinating world, and populate this setting with equally fascinating originals. Setting. World building. Characterization begins in the genes with traits like gender and hair color. But once a character is born, an array of physical and social settings buffet and mold her outer selves. Time and space frame such events, greatly influencing outer appearances and behaviors. Time comes in two dimensions, location and duration. An author could locate a story in a contemporary setting, historical period, hypothetical future, or timeless fantasy. Within each period, the storyteller also sets the duration of the telling in relationship to the lives of the characters. Storytelling time and lifetime could be equal. My Dinner with Andre is a 2-hour film about a 2-hour dinner. Or the telling could span days, months, years, even a lifetime. Terrace Winter's long-form series Boardwalk Empire and Jonathan Franzen's novel The Corrections are examples. Storied space is also two-dimensional. Physical location plus level of conflict. A story could be found anywhere. A mountain peak, a farm, a space station, a certain street in a certain city, a certain building on that street, a certain room in that building, Once set, the physical location houses a cast of characters, so the writer must determine its level or levels of conflict. Physical, woman against nature. Social, woman against the law. Personal, woman against her in-laws. Inner, self against self, or any combination. Patterns of behavior, usually routine, sometimes ritualized, begin at birth and develop through infancy. Daily needs generate activities such as eating and playing, greetings and goodbyes. Humdrum as these customs may be, they embed themselves in a role's characterization. Moral imagination. An author with a strong moral imagination sees meaning in every aspect of a story's setting. Nothing and no one is neutral, not cop, prop, or raindrop. This writer marshals a constellation of charged values so that everything in her story rings either positively, negatively, or with an ironic fusion of both. Nothing is without value. All things neutral are kept off page, off stage, off screen. In the same sense that the writer is the character's first actor, she's also the story's first production designer, intent on making every element in the setting reveal, reflect, counterpoint, or change at least one character, perhaps the whole cast. When an automobile enters, a writer without a moral imagination sees it as no more than a vehicle. But to a production designer, it comes charged with a value. As a bright pink Maserati pulls up to an opera house, the writer's choices not only characterize its absurdly wealthy owner, but the parking attendant who takes her key with a sarcastic smile. A moral imagination also ranks values by importance from most to least. Life-death is a possibility that shadows all stories, but a psychological thriller may foreground it as its core value, while a romantic comedy backgrounds it as irrelevant. The core value of a war story is victory-defeat, but life-death haunts every action. Without a moral imagination, a setting amounts to little more than furniture. Cultural restraints. Time, place, and people not only restrain what a character can do, but stipulate what she must not do. As a character enters a scene, webs of restraint curtail her relationship with every person and object. How to walk safely down a dark alley, how to respond to someone's touch, what to say in a courtroom. In principle, the more positive the relationships that surround a character's life, the more restricted, more civilized her behavior. The reverse is also true. When a character has nothing to lose, she's capable of anything. Physical settings. Like all things in life, the world's physical and temporal forces, lethal diseases, the car that won't start, not enough time to get something done, too far to go to get what you need, cut both ways. Sunshine tans you or burns you. Farms and cities provide food and shelter, then pollute rivers with fertilizer and fill the air with noxious pollutants. Environments shape the people who live in them. Scandinavia and the Mediterranean produce people with distinctively different dispositions. Why? The weather. Objects can prompt the conscious mind in one direction and the subconscious in another. Putting a briefcase on a church pew makes people feel competitive. Japan reduced suicides by installing streetlights that gave off a blue glow. The smell of a cleaning liquid makes coal miners want to tidy up. When creating a story's physical setting, ask questions in two directions. One, how does my story's time, space, and objects affect the personalities of my characters? Two, how do the setting's antagonistic forces thwart my characters' desires? Social settings. A character and her society constantly interact. Social settings provide various groups, nationalities, religions, neighborhoods, schools, professions, to which an individual aspires or rebels. Either way, they anchor her identity. For example, the two cultures known as scientists and artists tend to inspire two very contrasted personalities. The same can be said about the citizens of small southern towns versus big northern cities, or kindergarten teachers versus porn stars. Yet, within the shared traits of any community, the variety of personalities seems limitless. The most striking feature of massive social systems is the price they exact for membership. After successfully climbing a corporate pyramid, an executive may become a superbly efficient employee, but a woefully deficient human being. Make no mistake, however, institutions couldn't dehumanize without help. Many people secretly welcome their loss of soul and live comfortably inside a shell of self-deception. Cracking it open would demand blunt force honesty, but they put that away long ago. As the story-driven documentaries of Frederick Wiseman, such as High School, Basic Training, Hospital, Ballet, make clear, people working inside institutions unknowingly dehumanize one another. For a lucky few, however, they sometimes rehumanize. When creating a setting, think deeply about the effects of its total culture on your characters, then map out your cast's specific interactions, as we'll examine in Chapter 15. And finally, whenever complex characters meet, refine them with subtle but distinctive social personae. Personal settings. The inescapable intimacies of families, friends, and lovers create conflicts like none other in life. Friends embrace and enjoy until they betray each other. A mother's love shines like the sun until she's disrespected. Nothing explodes into optimism or crumbles into pessimism faster than romance. For reasons no family member can understand, one sibling joins a religious cult while another edits American Atheist magazine. Their quarrels never end. When setting up your story, give extended thought to the relationships of intimacy within your cast. This level of conflict offers the greatest opportunity for originality and nuance of characterization. Setting versus characterization. A character's collisions with her physical, social, and personal worlds etch her characterization trait by trait. To trace the influence of these settings on your cast, consider these 8 possible relationships. 1. The setting submerges a character in things such as home, car, job, and poker club until her belongings become extensions of her core self. In Henry James's Portrait of a Lady, Madame Merrill explains the principle of character extension to her young admirer, Isabel Archer. Quote, "When you've lived as long as I, you'll see that every human being has his shell, and that you must take the shell into account. By the shell, I mean the whole envelope of circumstances. There's no such thing as an isolated man or woman. Each of us made up some cluster of appurtenances. What shall we call our self? Where does it begin? Where does it end? It overflows into everything that belongs to us, and then it comes flowing back again. I know a large part of myself is in the clothes I choose to wear. I've a great respect for things. One's self for other people is one's expression of one's self, and one's house, one's furniture, one's garments, the books one reads, the company one keeps. These things are all expressive." This principle guided writings such as Michael Ondaatje's The English Patient and Jonathan Franzen's The Corrections. 2. The setting releases forces of antagonism that block the character's desires. In All Is Lost, the Indian Ocean overwhelms a lone sailor. In Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, injustice drives the mother of a murdered daughter to murder. In Girl's Trip, friends, lovers, and ex-lovers sabotage a bachelorette weekend. When unexpected reactions suddenly open gaps between what a character thinks will happen and what actually does, these fractures on the surface of life send quakes downward to disrupt the subconscious. Then, as if from the floor of a volcano, unwanted desires surge upward into improvised, usually unwanted, and often regretted behavior. This movement, radiating down from the setting to the deepest self, gives a character depth. The energy, rebounding up from the depths of self to the setting, gives a story power. 3. The setting and its cast form one grand metaphor for reality. Like pieces of a puzzle, setting and cast fit together. Like mirror opposites, they define each other. The characters give meaning to their setting, the setting reflects back on its characters, and together they stand for life. In Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, Wonderland is ruled by magic, not physics, and its events obey lunacy, not logic. As a result, its cast members, including Alice, reflect their setting by undergoing nonsensical transformations, all working together to create a multidimensional metaphor for the real world, real people, and human absurdity. This pattern of a setting mirroring its cast and a cast mirroring its society is clearly seen in works such as Succession and Parasite. Each of these tellings merges domestic drama with the thriller genre so that the characters, their families, and society mutually infect each other. The stories in turn reflect the politics of the real world in which corruption acts as the secret cement that holds society together. 4. The setting floods a character's mind and sends an onrush of objects, people, and memories streaming through her thoughts. Toni Morrison's Beloved and David Means' short story, The Knocking, are two examples. 5. The setting recedes into the background as the foreground overflows with characters. In Larry David's Curb Your Enthusiasm and Matthew Weiner's Mad Men, homes, offices, and restaurants serve as picture frames for character portraits. 6. The setting leads an existence so indifferent, so separate from its characters, that they seem isolated on an island. Tom Stoppard's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead and Samuel Beckett's Waiting for Godot are two examples. 7. The setting's objects seem to have a will of their own. For example, Edgar Allan Poe's The Fall of the House of Usher and Brian Evanson's A Collapse of Horses. 8. The setting's objects turn into characters. In Lewis Carroll's Alice Through the Looking Glass, King, Queen, and Knight, three chess pieces, join Humpty Dumpty, an anthropomorphic egg, to fill out the cast. Guardians of the Galaxy features Groot, a humanoid tree, and Rocket, a genetically engineered raccoon. Characterization change. When your characters confront physical, social, and personal settings, they put on various outer selves. But none of these encounters are static, and all can dramatically and believably cause changes in a role's characterization. I can think of 4 commonplace ways. 1. Rebellion. A character may change her setting in hope of sending her personality in the direction she wants it to go. Rural artists head for the big city. Scholars drop out of school and enlist in the military, for example. 2. Travel. Adventures abroad encourage a hybrid global identity. Youth culture is one example. Jeans and tennis shoes, invented in the USA, made in Asia, are the uniform worn by young people everywhere on the 7 continents. 3. Time travel. A character can hide in a pocket of time. Nostalgics live in the past. Rat racers live in the future. Hedonists live in a perverse present. 4. The Internet. Borderless travel to electronic geographies inhabited by citizens with placeless addresses can radically alter an identity. Online culture is instantaneous, anonymous, depthless, and yet real, because within it, actual things happen to actual people, changing them for better or worse. Explicit traits. Once you apply your broad strokes, you need to sharpen the explicit traits that express your characters as individuals. No one is simply born that way. All complex characterizations display both genetically given and actively acquired traits. Genetic traits, for example, voice timbre, tend to last, while acquired tastes, for example, vocabulary, evolve. To create any one trait, hundreds of genes must interact while at the same time they absorb random impacts from countless external forces. When you work your imagination through both sources, traits coalesce into unique, fascinating characterizations. Every observable trait sits on a spectrum that ranges from positive to negative. First are those traits acted out in public, such as sophisticated, unsophisticated, social, antisocial, and charismatic, boring, that define a character's relationships to acquaintances and strangers. Then come behaviors acted out in private, such as generous, selfish, encouraging, fault-finding, and concerned, unconcerned. These mark her personal relationships with family, lovers, and friends. How many traits or how few? In the visual arts, if an empty canvas is one, and a completely filled canvas is two, the optimum density the eye enjoys is 1.3, or 3/10 full. The same, I believe, applies to character. Leave 7/10 of a protagonist unknown and mysterious. Based on the 3/10 you express, the reader audience will fill in the rest as needed from their own imagination. For if a writer were to dramatize every possible trait a character might display, the telling would take forever, the role would become incomprehensible, and the reader audience would be overwhelmed. On the other hand, one lone trait, a foreign accent, for example, shrinks a character to a bit part. Only the writer can discover the ideal number of traits for any particular character. A trait's necessity depends on how much is changed by its removal. If you want to cut or add a trait, ask, what, if anything, is lost or gained? What follows is a short list of topics that generate traits of characterization. Your particular story will add or subtract from them. Names and nicknames. Like the roles they identify, names express more meaning in fiction than real life. The deliberate plainness of John and Mary, for instance, gives a character a particular quality of ordinariness that somebody actually named Mary or John would not have. But be careful. Unless you're hoping for laughs, avoid blatantly symbolic names, such as branding a corporate executive Mr. Big Man. On the other hand, in Death of a Salesman, Arthur Miller called his impoverished salesman Willie Loman, a name that, for some reason, never raises an eyebrow. Allegorical genres such as fantasy and horror create boldly symbolic settings and add fun by giving their characters emblematic names. For example, in C.S. Lewis's religious allegory, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the founder of a new kingdom is named Peter, echoing Saint Peter, founder of the Christian Church. The betrayer of the story's Christ figure is a witch named Jadis, as in Judas. An autocratic housekeeper is called Mrs. McReady, as in the imperative, get ready. Naked and clothed. Strip your character naked and run a checklist of biographical items: age and eye appeal, height and weight, texture of muscle and fat, head and body hair, shade and grain of skin, posture and walk. Use your imagination to take her shopping and see what she would like to wear, then look in her closet and find out what she actually owns. Gender and sex life. What does your character find irresistibly erotic? What is her gender? What, if anything, does she do about it? Vocal tone and language. Now, close your eyes and listen. Like music, a character's voice touches unconscious feelings in readers and audiences. Give each of your characters a speech style with a unique vocabulary, sentence structure, pitch, diction, and imagery. The total effect becomes a concert of form and content, not only what she has to say, but how she says it. Facial expressions and gestures. Audiences read the flitting expressions on a character's face at 1/25th of a second. So study what's in your character's eyes and then pull back to witness her mannerisms, tics, and energy. Gestures create a language of their own in three varieties. 1. Hand waves, head tilts, and shoulder shrugs that enrich speech. 2. Symbolic gestures like an erect middle finger. 3. Imitative gestures like the thumb dance that means text me. Profession and recreation. People often take their identity from what they do for a living. Some take a second identity from what they do for play, golfer, hunter, bodybuilder, and the like. Determine what your character does in both cases, and then how much it means to who she is. Home and transportation. Honoré de Balzac said, "Show me what a man owns, and I'll tell you who he is." The extended self puts its arms around all it owns. For most characters, their two biggest extra identities are their house and car. Picture them both, then look inside. Knowledge and ignorance. What does my character know and not know? The amount and quality of her formal education set the background for this question, but beyond that, life lessons passed and flunked will also matter. Religion and beliefs. A character's core beliefs, ranging from whether or not God exists to whether or not people can be trusted, determine her choices in the face of conflict. So, start a conversation about values. Ask your character if human beings are good or evil. Listen to her answer and keep her talking. Conversation. If you spend enough time with your character, patterns of talk will recur. Money, politics, death, her husband, her children, her health, the latest tech, or ancient history. What she talks about is what she thinks about. Manners. Edmund Burke believed that politeness and manners give birth to all other virtues and are ultimately more important than laws. To put it in 21st century terms, Burke knew that the quality of respect human beings show one another sets the tone for every relationship inside a civilization. How does your character treat people? Implicit traits. All characters begin in mystery. Their outer traits offer clues to possibilities that lie beneath. As scenes unfold, the reader audience treats the outer traits of each role as clues to their inner traits. So these must be thoroughly explored and mined as well. Here are some ways to think about personalities, intelligence, attitudes, emotions, and more. Varieties of personality. Personalities come in a seemingly infinite array. In 319 BC, Theophrastus, a student of Aristotle, tried to catalog every ill-behaved character type he could imagine, from flatterer to slanderer, but stopped at just 30. In recent centuries, sharp-eyed humorists such as Mark Twain have noted modern versions of the pain in the neck, and some listed noble types as well, but still, no one sees an end. To make sense of this anarchy, psychologists have clustered the universe of personalities inside five grand galaxies. As I'll outline, each presents a spectrum that runs from positive to negative. The personality of any character you create should fit somewhere inside one of these binaries of behavior. 1. Openness, closeness. Openness reflects independence, curiosity, love of the arts, and all things new. A highly open character enjoys euphoric experiences such as skydiving and gambling, but may seem unpredictable or unfocused. Conversely, closeness suggests pragmatism, perseverance, and occasionally dogmatic single-mindedness. 2. Conscientiousness, capriciousness. Conscientiousness leads to a sense of honor, self-discipline, and planned rather than impulsive behavior. Extreme conscientiousness is often perceived as stubbornness and obsession. Capriciousness may be spontaneous, but it can also seem unreliable and sloppy. 3. Extroversion, introversion. The extrovert leans toward sociability, talkativeness, and assertiveness, often becoming attention-seeking or overbearing. The introvert may be a shy, reflective personality, and yet perceived as aloof or self-absorbed. 4. Agreeableness, argumentativeness. Agreeableness tends to reflect compassion and generosity. All smiles, agreeableness is often seen as naive or foolish. Argumentativeness can make one antagonistic, competitive, suspicious, and untrustworthy. 5. Rationality, neuroticism. Rationality encourages a calm, constant personality, which, when pushed to its limits, may turn cold-hearted and indifferent. Neuroticism, on the other hand, experiences negative emotions such as anger and anxiety, sadness and fear, quickly and extremely. Fragile and insecure, a neurotic hungers for stability. These five spectra, mixed and merged, create endless possibilities. But beyond these types, I think the reason personalities are so various is simple. Coincidence. Every human being is a combination of determinism and chance. The trillions of daily collisions between human genomes and countless aspects of their environment are so random, so unpredictable, so riddled with luck, good and bad, that they generate an infinite variety of selves. What's more, personalities bend and flex depending on the nature of relationships, such as boss, employee, parent-child, lover-friend. This pattern holds not only for her voice, but her gestures, facial expression, postures, word choices, temperament, and the like. In other words, her personality sets certain limits, But as she engages in her social and personal relationships, she shifts expression from one quality to the next. Varieties of intelligence. Have you given your character a mind fit to do what you want her to do? If you want her to do dumb things, is she convincingly dumb in all ways? Dumb dialogue, dumb haircut, or the reverse, smart to do smart? Above all, is she credible? Give thought to more than your character's IQ, but to her EQ and various CIs as well. IQ measures analytical thinking, spatial recognition, and problem solving. EQ measures emotional intelligence, the ability to perceive a subtle variety of feelings and emotions in yourself and others. CIs measure creative intelligence, the power of imagination, intellectual curiosity, the drive to know, and cultural intelligence, the ability to thrive in foreign settings. Starting with your character's particular mix of intelligences, what are her habits of thought? Every human being, for example, develops a personal strategy for relationships. If her method has worked in the past, it doesn't easily bend when circumstances change. How flexible is your character's mind? Attitudes, beliefs, values. What are your character's attitudes, her likes and dislikes, loves and hates, fears and dreads? Is she optimistic, pessimistic? To get answers, interrogate your character. What she thinks about herself shapes her beliefs, so ask the key psychological question first. Who are you? Does her answer describe her inner nature or name her profession? How much of an identity has she carved out for herself, and how much is wrapped up in her career? Ask big questions such as, what do you wish to achieve in the future? What must you do for yourself, for others? What must you never do to yourself, to others? How do you judge the essential nature of mankind? Good, evil, some of both? Emotion, mood, temperament. Emotion is the side effect of change. As the dominant value in a character's life changes charge from positive, for example, wealth, to negative, poverty, the character suffers a negative emotion. As the value charge moves from the negative, pain, to the positive, pleasure, the character's mood changes to delight. These experiences, however, are relative to what the character sees as meaningful in life. What's negative? What's positive? If you were to put your character in a romantic relationship and then have her lover walk out on her, how would change in the key values of love-hate, happiness-sadness, and companionship, loneliness, change her mood? It may not be what you expect. Mood is a character trait that tends to draw the same reaction from different experiences. Sober-minded people, for example, often find fun-loving hobbies such as folk dancing and drone flying boring and annoying. Children have temperaments. Adults have personalities. Temperament is the byproduct of a character's brain chemistry, whereas personality is the byproduct of socialization. As a character interacts with her world, her temperament evolves from juvenile to adolescent to adult. But no matter how mature she may become, her childhood temperament will follow her like her shadow. Is she overall cheery or grouchy? Focused or daydreamy? Thrill-seeking or reclusive? Her fifth-grade teacher could tell you. One spectrum of temperament, for example, runs from authoritarianism to anti-authoritarianism. Does your character back in-groups or defend out-groups? Authoritarians favor militarism and religious fundamentalism. Anti-authoritarians reject both. Authoritarians look on artists with suspicion. Artists, especially comic artists, ridicule authority. Authoritarians champion family unity and the self-discipline of being on time for a job they don't like very much and then putting in 8 productive hours without attitude. Anti-authoritarians often flit from job to job, dragging their children with them, forever in search of personal fulfillment. Mirror, world, author. The person a character sees in her makeup mirror today depends, in great part, on her past. Her memories, however, tend to be interpretations of what happened, rather than actual events. The moment an event hits a character's life, her mind begins to reshape its details, cut much of it, reorder some of it, and often invent things that never happened. From her reconstruction, she construes the meaning of the event and how it affects who she is. Others who witnessed the event will have a second, rather different interpretation. You, as author, know the facts and have a third point of view. The reader audience adds a fourth. As you write, alternate from all points of view until every trait, explicit and implicit, serves one purpose: characterization. Expressing characterization. A characterization can be expressed by what it is, what it is not, and what it is like. These 3 general categories offer the writer at least 9 distinctive techniques. 1. Simile. An analogy that compares a characterization to other people or things. James Thurber, for example, said his boss at The New Yorker, quote, looked like a dishonest Abe Lincoln, unquote. 2. Metaphor. A direct link that connects a characterization to other people or things. Like the example I just gave you, you may draw on figures from history, mythology, literature, or pop culture. Quote, she's the Tony Soprano of self-control, unquote. 3. Correlations. Characterization as an extension of personal habits or professions. Quote, she found her hair color in the same place she found her courage, a bottle, unquote. 4. Contrasts. Differences compare generally. Quote, she's unlike the typical college grad, close quote. 5. Oppositions. Contradictions compare more sharply. Quote, she's an anti-intellectual PhD, unquote. 6. Telling. Sometimes readers may need telling language to picture a characterization, quote, she stood 6 feet 2 inches tall, close quote. But on stage or on screen, the audience sees the actor and instinctively judges her height. 7. Showing. Actions for the eye. Quote, at 6'2", she had to duck into my car, unquote. Or for the ear, quote, when she got in my car, I heard crack as her skull smacked the door frame, followed by God damn it, unquote. Both activate the imagination. 8. Self-assessments. What the character says about herself may or may not be true, given the gift people have for self-deception, but that she says it, and to whom, can be a clue to characterization. Quote, I'm a people person, unquote. 9. Other assessments. What one person says about another may or may not be true, given the axes that people have to grind, but that it is said and by whom can be an important clue to characterization. Quote, she says she's a people person, but, unquote. In The Short Happy Life of Frances McCumber, Hemingway introduces Margot McCumber with an inventory of her traits, then seals her true character with a past choice. Quote, she was an extremely handsome and well-kept woman of the beauty and social position which had, 5 years before, commanded $5,000 as the price of endorsing, with photographs, a beauty product which she had never used. Unquote. The phrases woman of the beauty and with photographs flash the image of a face you might glimpse while paging a fashion magazine. That's an explicit trait. While well-kept and social position give her an aura of privilege, an implicit trait, that she took money to endorse a product she never used suggests an elastic morality, true character, and the dark events to come. Yes, but who is she really? The ancient adage, nothing is what it seems, applies directly and deeply to character creation. Explicit and implicit traits form surfaces, and these surfaces hide a truth. Characterization, therefore, expresses only who a character appears to be and not, in fact, who she is. When readers or audiences find a characterization credible and intriguing, their thoughts run something like this. Interesting. But who is she really? Is she honest or dishonest? Loving or cruel? Strong or weak, generous or selfish, good or evil, what is her essential, true character? The next chapter looks at the inner aspects of true character that live out of sight and inside the mind.